We should do that with wrestling.
Good morning. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Business and Labor to order this morning. I've got a few bills up this morning for public hearing, and do we have bill introductions this morning?
We do. Two LCs.
I don't trust this.
Okay, we'll wait and do those after the hearings.
Okay.
That's what people talk about since we got people waiting. So up first, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2646. Jan, could you give us a summary of the bill, please?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, committee members, this measure requires an employer to provide the employee who is a parent, guardian, or custodian of a child with 8 hours per the school year of unpaid leave to attend school-related activities. And it makes it an unlawful employment practice to threaten or to carry out the termination, discipline, or otherwise discriminate in terms or conditions of employment if the employee takes leave to attend the child's school-related activity. There are no amendments before you.
Thank you. And up first, Brad Avakian, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Brad Avakian, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I want to thank you for holding a hearing on House Bill 2646. In the last legislative session, Senator Edwards and a host of House members called for the Bureau of Labor and Industries and the Oregon Council on Civil Rights to come back with recommendations in order to eliminate the wage disparities between women and men and people of color and white men in Oregon. House Bill 2646 is one of the recommended strategies that we believe the state should take on in order to give especially women equal footing with men on the job and begin the effort to eliminate wage disparities. What the bill does is it allows an employee to take up to 8 hours per year off of work in order to attend school activities with their children. It provides some safeguards in it for employers by requiring that there be at least 5 days written notice that the activity is needed, and also contains a provision that if collective bargaining agreements contain same or better language, that the collective bargaining agreement would supersede. The reason the bill is important and the reason that it's tied to the effort on equal pay is that women are still the primary caregivers in our society, even though the bill relates certainly to either parent. We believe that it's important that parents in that position not have to choose between spending valuable time with their children at a parent-teacher conference or another important school activity and their work. And so this bill is aimed at providing the kind of flexibility that's needed for parents while at the same time providing ample notice to employers that the time off will be necessary.
Thank you. Representative Benetto.
Barreto.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm looking forward to March. Maybe I'll have this down.
Yeah, there you go. Mr. Avakian, you say a recommended strategies. I'm wondering whose recommended strategies these are.
The Oregon Council, Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto, the Oregon Council on Civil Rights is a council created to advise both the Bureau of Labor and Industry and other elected officials on important matters related to the advancement of civil rights in Oregon. They spent over 2 years studying quite literally every city, every state, every country in the world that had made some efforts on eliminating wage disparities, sorted through what they believed were the best practices adopted or studied by those other jurisdictions, and then came up with a set of recommendations that they published in an equal pay pamphlet that you can find at the Bureau of Labor and Industries website on what Oregon should do to eliminate wage disparities. This was one of those ideas.
Follow up, Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many other states have this policy?
I don't know, Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto. I don't know of any. Oregon has really taken a strong leadership role. There may be some. I don't know. But I know that Oregon has taken a very strong leadership role in putting together a portfolio of policies that we believe will get us where we need to be on equal pay.
Another follow-up, Mr. Barreto. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand the direction that you're going with this bill, but it seems to me, even in the 3 weeks that I've been in this position here, we have seen a lot of bills come through that are basically pro-employee bills and negative towards the employer. And this one here, I don't think would hurt a lot of larger businesses, but when we look at the family and family-run businesses, I think this would be a big affront to them. I looked at this, and as I was reading through it, I thought, this comes across as almost the state bullying small businesses, into conforming to what they think the business should look like, rather than the free market or the freedom that the employer has to run his business the way he would see best. And so, I was talking to someone about this, and they say, yeah, it sounds kind of like the bullying bill, because it just bullies the employer. So I would like you to say, is this going to create jobs? Is this going to hurt jobs? Is this going to help families? Is this going to hurt families? I'm sorry, I get a little passionate.
Barreto, I understand that. You got to be careful about impugning somebody's motives and characterizing them in such a way.
My apologies.
That we, there's some kind of ethical standards around that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I'm happy to answer the question, though. We believe that whether or not certain business associations support or oppose the bill, we believe that Oregon's business community is ready to start creating flexible work schedules and change the business culture in Oregon in order to give folks equal footing on the job. We've talked to many businesses that we believe are going to welcome changes like this. And frankly, we don't believe that this creates the kind of burden, Representative, that you described. And that businesses will welcome finding ways to make their business environment more flexible for their workers. That's why the bill is advanced. We also think that businesses in Oregon will be more competitive in attracting top talent when they start opening their doors to especially folks that are trying to balance families and career in the raising of their children, and that's even more important today as we have created a culture that necessitates both parents working full-time in order to take care of the basic necessities of life. And if that's going to be the case, Oregon needs to take the lead and make the extra effort in seeing that children can be raised and taken care of in appropriate ways while parents try to earn the money they need to in order to take care of their family.
Before we go on, I'd like to bring up Representative Reed, sponsor of the bill. He came in while you were speaking, and I think it's only fair to let him join this question and answer. And I didn't see Representative Smith-Warner back there. You may also join us up here so you can help answer some of these questions as sponsors of the bill.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to stay at the dais? I'm happy to.
Please.
Yes, please. Okay.
So, Representative Reed, I would like you to go ahead and give your testimony, and then we'll continue with questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I'm Tobias Reed from Beaverton. I apologize for being a little bit late. I heard some of what the commissioner had to say, so I think I can cut things fairly short. I would add just a couple of things. One is I'm sure you're all familiar with the statistic that women only make 79 cents for every dollar that men make, but that gap is even starker when it comes to parents. In fact, mothers only make 60 cents for every dollar that fathers make in Oregon. I'm married to a working mother. In fact, one of the only reasons I can be a legislator and be here is the support of that working mother. And I'm here as a result to testify in support of the bill, and that's the reason I'm a sponsor of it. I think it is essential to give people the flexibility to be both committed fully to being employees and to being parents. I think that's one of the reasons that it's so important for us to pass this bill, and I appreciate your hearing it today.
Representative Smith Warner, could you introduce yourself for the record? I'm not sure we got read. But.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I represent House District 45, Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. I indeed share the support of this as a working mother who is married to a working father. And I believe that most of us here today discussing this have always had jobs where we had that kind of flexibility, where we were easily able to go to, whether it was because we made our own schedules, because we were legislators, because we were whatever we did before this, that it's not something that we have had to worry very much about. And to me, I think the more we can do to provide that kind of valuable, the more you can do to support the parents' involvement in the children's school lives, the better the kids are going to do, and the better employees those people are going to be. I would also like to refer to a point. There are numerous other states, I believe it's 8 states, that have similar leave. In a number of those places, it's more. I know that either I can't remember right now if it's Minnesota or Massachusetts has 24, provides 24 hours, but there is a number of other states and localities that do provide this kind of leave. Thank you.
Thank you. And now questions, Representative Fagan.
Mostly just a comment. I wanted to affirm a comment made by Commissioner Avakian about this being good for Oregon businesses because it actually allows them to be more competitive for workers. As I'm sure many of you know, I was raised by a single dad, and he never held a normal 9-to-5 job, did kind of random at-home businesses that left us kind of constantly in poverty. He sold Amway, Lifestyles, Diet Cookies, Skybiz, all these various, because no job would provide him the flexibility as a single parent with 3 kids to be able to go to parent-teacher conferences and other things. So he chose instead to, you know, tried not to, but essentially raise us in poverty with these kind of variety of home-based businesses so that he could have that flexibility. So I wish this had been around when my dad was raising us so that he would have had the ability to go into the workplace with the confidence that he would have the ability as a single parent to take time off to be able to be there for his 3 kids when we needed him at school. So thank you for mentioning that, Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, did you reference earlier 5-day notice? I can't find it in the bill.
It is in section... Mr. Chair, Representative, the answer is yes, and it is in section 3, line, beginning on line 25 and through 27 of the first page of the bill.
Okay, and then, okay, thank you for that. Follow up. Section 3, line 23 and 24 references the increments in which this 8 hours can be divided, and I believe it's 1 hour at a time is the minimum. It would seem like 2 hours would be a little more palatable. Because, I mean, as a father, I want people, I'm self-employed, so I don't have some of the same restrictions people that are employed do. But I have been employed by other people at times in my life, and so I do understand the concept here. But I think it would be somewhat more reasonable to make it 2-hour increments. That's my opinion. Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's really helpful.
You know, I don't think, first of all, I don't know of any businesses that don't give time off for this. But you know, when a draft is written, there's always the what's the problem, what's the solution on there. And so coming up with the problem, are there or have the sponsors of the bill, which would be you, Mr. Vakin, do you hear of a lot of businesses that don't have that flexibility that cause caused you to draft this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto, there's a yes and a no to that. Okay. It's anecdotal because there is no law, so the agency has never seen a complaint under this area. We had a very similar discussion to this several sessions ago with regard to a different kind of leave, with similar opposing arguments, and that was a leave that had to do with providing spouses of veterans time off to help the veteran transition when they were being sent overseas and when they were coming back. The agency had never had a complaint filed because there was no law protecting a spouse to take time off for that type of a thing. But we had had calls, a number of calls. I personally had a call from a spouse who had a newborn at home, who had a husband that was being shipped off to Iraq, had requested time off from work so that they could have some time together, a family, before her husband went off to a war zone. And you know that virtually every employer in Oregon would go the extra mile to giving time off for that important family time. In that particular case, the young mother was told, you choose. You don't come to work, you lose your job. And she was faced with this terrible dilemma. Anecdotally, I personally have heard situations similar to that with this type of a thing, where just like Representative Fagan mentioned, a parent with a young student at school wants to be able to volunteer a little bit, spend a little bit of time. It's an important part of raising a child to be involved in their school activities, and especially with a parent-teacher conference, where you're really gaining valuable insights as to how your child is developing at school, to be able to cut an hour or 2 hours off to spend with the teacher. But an employer, and there may be few of them, but it does happen, says, I'm sorry, but you need to be at work, and it puts the parent in a terrible, terrible position. So the bill is drafted not to be a burden to the many, many businesses that would provide that time off every single time it's necessary, but to those few businesses that don't have that sensitivity and would not grant the time.
And perhaps other testifiers will have some information about your question that may shed a little more light on that. I don't know for sure, though. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get this actually to the commissioner. I guess my question, I'm thinking more in a small business aspect and everything. And we have a small manufacturing facility. I have three people that are in there running it right now. Do we want to be to where we're 15 people inside? Most definitely. That's where we're trying to get to. I'm just wondering how this would affect me personally with my business if all of a sudden I had two employees wanting to take off in an afternoon 2 hours early when I have to get stuff out the door, products that need to be out to customers that evening or hit the UPS truck so they're there the next day. If I have a couple of them that want to leave, I'm completely shut down. So would I be facing any sort of fine, or what would my punishment be if I wasn't able to let both employees go and they wanted to go to a school event because they both had kids in a game or had an activity, they both have kids in school, so they were leaving to go to an activity at the same time to where I had to shut my business down because I was losing two employees. How would that affect me if I said, no, you can't go?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you ask a very good question about a small business where all employees ask for all the same exact time off at the same exact time.
Well, it's not all.
Time.
I just have two of them shut me down.
Well, that would be all.
So,
in your example.
The three. Yeah. Well, because I can't have one person by themselves.
No, I understand. You ask an important question where if there was a situation where a small business had all of its employees ask for the same exact time off at the same exact time, then what would be the case? I would be very sensitive to taking a look at whether or not in that unique situation there needs to be some type of a balance. We've, for instance, have created those kind of solutions through rulemaking with meal and rest periods, so that employers have flexible situations in very unique circumstances like that. Answering it in the broader sense, specifically to when it would shut down a business, there could be situations with this bill and others where an employer is put in a more difficult position than they normally would be without it. And my answer would be women have earned 79 cents on the dollar and less forever in this country. And if we don't do something to shift the business culture now, and I think Oregon should take the lead in very smart ways to do it, that wage disparity will continue to exist forever. So I would encourage the committee to be looking for smart ways to help shift the business culture in Oregon to eliminate that disparity. We think that this is one of the ways.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Yes. Thank you. I guess, I mean, because we have, well, it's two guys and one woman in our facility, and we're pretty flexible in organizing and scheduling things with them, but with us putting this into statute, it puts me in a very precarious position when two employees ask for something. So I think if this is directed and you're thinking it's for women to use, it may cause businesses to seriously consider, do I, because you're saying this is about women. Now employers are going to be thinking, well, should I hire a woman if they're going to be putting me in this position all the time to where I can't get my product out the door? So I don't like the fact that you're targeting women. This should be about employees and the whole scenario, because I think you're going to damage, if you're, the way you state it, you're going to damage employers from wanting to go out and hire businesses or women, because in the back of their mind they're going to be thinking, oh, only women are going to use this, because that's what you're telling me right now. I think it's going to be used across the board. I have kids in sports. My oldest is a senior, but I think you should be careful how you describe this up here and how you present this outside of this building. This is about families and people being able to have time. So I'm supportive of the concept of what you're trying to do. I don't know if it works for every business case to go out and with a broad brush say, hey, this is what it's going to do. We should target maybe if you have 50 or more employees that this could be something, but we need to have some flexibility in the production facility, come up with a way, and I'm just trying to get you to circle your brain, how can I handle this to where I don't have state playoff game. Half my employees want to take off. It's going to shut my production down. How do we handle situations like that? So
I would like Representative Widener, I think that the bill does apply to more than just women, and I think characterizing the commissioner's needing to be careful, I think he was using women as an example how this impacts women. The bill applies
to everybody. But they keep saying women.
You're using that as an example, so right. You know, I don't think we need to answer that question. So are there other questions?
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Barton.
Thank you. Commissioner, either of the representatives, I noticed in Section 2 on page 1, it talks about attending the school conference, et cetera. I was just wondering how, if state playoff game, how that might relate to this bill, if it in fact does at all. Does this bill apply to state playoff games?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barton, that certainly is not the intent. I think if you read through Section 3, the sections, Part D, attend school-sponsored events, that's probably about as close. But you bring up a great point, which is,
can we clarify that?
This is, yeah.
Thank you.
A, this is, you know, this is 8 hours of leave. This is, so they'd only do that once. Is my, I'm not really kidding. I am kidding, but I would just say briefly that, you know, businesses like yours who are working with your employees already, I think will continue to. And employees respect their jobs. They understand how their workplaces work. Nobody wants to shut down their business and harm their employer where they work so that they can go to their kids' parent-teacher conference or volunteer in their classroom. And I think that this will, as the commissioner mentioned, this will require the few bad actors to act correctly and will continue to give good actors the flexibility to work with their employees so that those employees have increased loyalty, increased retention, and increased good employee-ness. Sorry.
Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In theory, I really have no problem with the bill. And I don't think my Republican brothers do either. We're purely frustrated with just the constant theme of there's a few bad actors, so we're going to legislate everybody according to their bad behavior. I don't think that's good management. I think the best thing to do is look at the middle ground and legislate from there. You don't just make it the Wild West, obviously, and say, well, we got 10 great employers in the state that are just amazing, so we're not going to have any laws. I would agree that would be insane. Well, on the flip side, I feel like we keep talking about being competitive for employees. The problem is if we continue to make it harder and harder or more and more threatening for employers that either exist here or want to come here, we are going to hurt our economy, and that's going to hurt everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're the employer or the employee. And so just please be cautious of that.
Representative Fagan.
I think that it sounds as if even the panel could, you know, people are saying we don't oppose this in theory. The examples that have been brought forward, I think, would be easily classified as situations where there might be an undue burden. So I'm curious if there's, you know, there's other laws that we've looked at, and there's certainly other laws in the books that protect employees, and they say it's not an unlawful employment practice if doing this would create an undue burden, and then it kind of lists out what that is. Certainly the example that Representative Widener gave, I think, could easily be classified as an undue burden if really it would shut your business down if you know, both employees were to take the day off. So that might be a consideration, too, is to add in a, you know, it's not an unlawful employment practice if this would create an undue burden, and then obviously factors to kind of flesh out what that means. It's just kind of a suggestion.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I listened very carefully to Representative Widener's example and was very sensitive to it. And we at the Bureau have been this route many, many times in rulemaking in order to clarify. And I mentioned meal and rest periods alone. There's well-developed law with regard to that type of a balancing test for employers that can easily be used with something like this, too.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony this morning, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I hope you'll understand I'm going to be a little bit late to caucus. We have a parent-teacher conference this morning.
I'll pass that on to whoever it matters to.
whoever cares.
I would rather go to the playoff game.
With that, could I have up Leslie Sutton, Beth Kessler, and Kate Newell? Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Newhall, here today with Family Forward. We're happy to be here supporting House Bill 2646. We support giving families the flexibility that they need to be able to attend important school-related activities like parent-teacher conferences. And generally, I'm the one up here talking about pay equity and this being one of the important parts of the puzzle in making sure that we eliminate the gender gap. But I'm going to take a slightly different tack today. I think one of the things that we recognize in looking at this bill that one of the most important factors in a student's academic success is parental involvement in their academic endeavors. One of the challenges that working parents face is balancing their work requirements with attendance at school functions, like parent-teacher conferences, school meetings, school activities, assemblies, field trips. Parental presence at school proves particularly tricky for parents who work at companies that don't have flexible schedules and don't provide this kind of accommodation. And we know that that particularly impacts low-wage workers. Low-wage workers have the least access to flexible schedules. At the same time, children of low-income families tend to need greater educational support. So the school activities leave, as envisioned in House Bill 2646, will provide parents with a very modest 8 hours of job-protected time each year. I think that parents are going to use this time very judiciously. 8 hours is not that much time. And back to sort of the business impacts, I think there very much is a positive business impact in ensuring that our students come out with great academic success, that their parents are involved in their education. And this is not a new thing. This is something that at least nine other states have. And just for example, California provides up to 40 hours of school activity leave. Louisiana provides up to 16 hours. Massachusetts, 24 hours. I think in comparison, 8 hours really is a very modest amount of time that I don't think actually parents are going to use to attend the football game. I think they're going to save it for really important things like that parent-teacher conference. So we believe that this is a common sense proposal that will increase parents' ability to be involved in their children's education, and we encourage your support of House Bill 2646.
Thank you. Whoever would like to go next, please.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Leslie Sutton, and today I'm here with the Oregon Developmental Disabilities Coalition. It's a coalition of over 30 organizations that spread across Oregon that promote the equity and community inclusion for people with developmental disabilities in their communities and their families. We call it the IDD Coalition. The IDD Coalition believes that everybody benefits when people with disabilities have the supports they need to live healthy and fulfilling lives as members of their community. We support House Bill 2646 because we believe from the disability standpoint that those parent-teacher conferences we've heard a lot about today could also be meetings around the individual education plan, which is where a child with a disability has their school supports planned in one of those meetings. And we believe that the bill does cover that. It is critically important to talk about that. But we are also working on an amendment with Senator Edwards' office to include disability service planning meetings as one of the things that people could use these 8 hours of unpaid leave for. When a child with intellectual or developmental disabilities has support needs outside of school, so we're moving outside of the school building here, parents have to attend those meetings too. And often this is where they're going to plan what skills, maybe skills training that their child needs to become an independent member of their community. Maybe it's planning for respite hours to give the parents some time away so that they can work through some time away from their child with a disability. It could also be maybe having some attendance supports to help the child learn how to be a community member. So what happens in these disability meetings, these are primarily what I'm speaking to are meetings when people are receiving Department of Human Services supports in the Office of Developmental Disabilities. So that's what I have experience with, so I'll speak to that today. During these meetings, the parents and sometimes the children will meet with a case manager, talk about the parents' goals, the child's goals, and really where do you see your child going in a year, and how can we provide supports to lift you up to that so your child can have a healthy and successful year. Sometimes service providers will attend these meetings as well. And, you know, every family and every child has different support needs. And so these planning meetings can be an hour. They can also be 4 hours long. It just depends on the situation. For short meetings now, when families cannot take time off work, we have county case managers and providers meeting in the early morning hours. We have them meeting in the evening for just to try to accommodate this. This is a critical thing. These plans cannot move forward without parents. So for these longer meetings, though, what we're finding is you're having to do series of smaller meetings. Your conversation gets broken up and lost. So if they could take this time off, they could use it all in one. They could really do a great disability planning meeting, and they can really put their family on a good track to move forward. So amending House Bill 2646 to include these disability service planning meetings would really help working parents who have children with disabilities so that they can really truly be a part of their planning for their child. And we know that when families are supported, they raise children who are ready to work for Oregon and ready to be members of their community. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Beth Kessler. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Consortium of Family Networks. It's a group of seven local nonprofit organizations around the state who are all led by parents of children with disability. Across the state, they support 7,000 of these families and local organizations, local companies in each community who support and partner with them. There were two main points I wanted to talk about today. One is the Consortium of Family Networks supports the bill, but also supports this proposed amendments that's being worked on around disability support planning. And I'd like to talk about the two things separately, if I could. So one specific to the individual education plan, so the time in school and the required IEP annual meetings that families participate in so that their child can receive those services in school. Additional testimony will be submitted in writing by FACT, which is the Oregon's Parent Information and Training Center, which is a contract they have with the Department of Education to provide support to families who have kids receiving special education services. They also work closely with the Department of Education on implementing those services. They speak to, in their testimony, a very real circumstance for many of the families across Oregon who cannot participate in these meetings. So moving slightly beyond anecdote, they have hundreds or thousands of families who contact them to say, sure, you're telling us parent involvement in these meetings is really important. You're helping us understand what our role in parent input in these documents is. I just can't get there. And the schools can't meet with us outside of school hours. So the people who need to be in the room to have these conversations about really important life course setting plans for these kids can't make that happen. So that's the IEP issue, which we believe is already covered in this bill. So we do support the bill. The other piece is disability support planning. So in addition to these required meetings with schools, which need to happen during the school day, there are disability support services that are really a lifeline for families outside of the school day. So we have families who, in order to keep their children healthy and safe and able to live at home with their family, they need to rely on developmental disability services from their county and from the state. We have county programs and service coordinators who try very, very hard to accommodate schedules for families. I spoke with a few of these county case managers who talk about the reality is we try very hard, we'll do lunch meetings, we'll go to them, we'll meet on the weekend, whatever we need to do, but there are required assessments and conversations and documents and signatures that make these services happen for families. There's also required timetables in which each of those things has to happen. And so what we know is if the conversation can't happen, the services don't get delivered to the family. It could be at no fault of a parent who is required in these situations to participate. It's not optional. And no fault for the service coordinators who are working very, very hard to make it happen. But when you have 30 days from the time this assessment is completed to the time services must be delivered and the documents must be signed, and parents who say they can't take the time off of work, and they have IEP meetings they have to participate in, and they might have other children, and they have the support needs for the child at home, it just becomes impossible. So we do support both the bill and the proposed amendment to include these disability service planning meetings. 8 hours may not be a ton. It may not solve all of the problems, but I think it's a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Widener.
Thank you. I mean, when we get into IEPs, 8 hours is not enough. So it's a whole different ballgame there. So, and I'd like to think that most of our employers across the state are pretty flexible on that, but because most school districts aren't even following IEPs even when they get them. That's the bigger issue that needs to be taken up in the education committee because it's a big, big problem that we're facing in the state.
Not sure if that was germane to the bill, but there was a comment for you. I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much for your testimony this morning. I really appreciate your input. With Betsy. That, I'd like to call up Betsy Earls.
I wish the feds would fully.
And anybody else she can drag up with her.
Betsy, do you want to drag me up?
No.
Poor Betsy.
Why do you hate parents?
Good morning. Pleased to see you all. For the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries and appearing in opposition to House Bill 2646. You know, I think that we've had already a lot of discussion up here this morning about some of the about the concerns that we have with the bill, so I won't add a lot to that, except to point out that Oregon already offers more leave for family and parental responsibilities than almost any other state. And the bill appears to add actually more than 8 hours to that leave. So perhaps we could get some clarification on that, because it sounds like the proponents are intending only 8 hours of leave. But if you look at the top of page two, line two, it looks like the leave applies for each child who's enrolled in school. So I would point out to you that we've already talked about small employers and the burden on small employers, but the smaller the employer and the bigger the family, if it's 8 hours of leave for every child, the more of a burden that's going to be. Especially when we talk about the penalties and the private right of action that employer would potentially suffer for getting crosswise with this potential new law. I think it would really help to have the kind of amendment that Representative Fagan is talking about, where if it created an undue burden on the employer to let employees go all at once, perhaps for a state playoff game or what have you, it wouldn't... employer wouldn't run afoul of the entire employment discrimination statutory scheme in Oregon. I think we all realize that small employers really do try and accommodate requests like these for time to attend school events, but it's just not possible all the time. So a change like that would make a big difference. The only other thing I would point out that hasn't come up is that the bill only requires 5 days of notice to employers before the leave is taken. And most employers, especially small employers, schedule farther out than 5 days. They're scheduling, or at least drafting their schedules, 2 or 3 weeks in advance. So I think it's unfair to characterize 5 days as a sufficient amount of lead time for employers to be able to accommodate a request like this. Most of the things that have been mentioned up here today as things that people would need leave for, IEP conferences, school conferences, you know, even the state playoffs or the district playoffs, there's far more than 5 days' notice that those things are going to happen. So I would request some attempt to balance employer scheduling needs against the amount of time that an employee probably really can provide as notice for those employers. So, and my final point on this, and I'll make it again and again, is, as has been pointed out, we're looking at an awful lot of bills in here that would provide more leave for employees. And before we start moving forward with these, I would just ask that this committee perhaps gather the bills they're considering moving together and take a look at the total burden that they are imposing on employers by moving them forward, and then make some choices about what's most important.
Thank you. Questions? And thank you, Ms. Earls, for your comments. And I am, I think, as we discussed, cognizant of all these bills, and am holding public hearings on a lot of them before we decide to take action on which ones I think the committee would like to move forward. I can't say whether that's some, a few, or all at this point, but am recognizing your concern. So
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Was there anybody else that wanted to testify on House Bill 2? Oh, you're going to come up by yourself?
Yes, I am.
We'll pencil you in.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Holvey, and members of the committee for allowing me a few moments to comment on House Bill 2646. For the record, I'm Jan Meekums, the State Director for NFIB. We're an association of 7,000 small business businesses privately owned in the state of Oregon. We are truly small business. Most of our members have less than 20 employees. In fact, a majority have less than 10 employees. Our average is about 3.5. As you well know, Oregon is truly a state of small businesses. And we concur with what was said earlier by Ms. Earls. And I just want to take a moment just to add another study by the Small Business Administration that says federal regulations, not including the compounding of state regulations, cost businesses with less than 20 employees 30% more to comply than what it than larger businesses that have 20 to 499 employees. It's just so much more difficult for small businesses to absorb this kind of disruption in the workplace. And I want to add to that a study that was done by NFIB, and I believe they may be updating it. It was done in 2004, I believe, and I'm happy to provide it to members of the committee regarding family leave. And the survey that was done resulted in 92% of our small business employers saying that they granted the family leave that was requested. 6% said they adjusted the request, and only 2% flat out denied it. So I think this isn't a problem that needs such a massive solution that would create such hardships for so many of our small businesses in Oregon that are still recovering, especially outside of the metro area, from the Great Recession. And we need to create as many pro-business bills coming out of this session as we can, because what we lack in the small business community is certainty. What we have in the small business community is uncertainty. What's going to happen at the state level? What's going to happen at the federal level? And as was stated again by Ms. Earls, that you will hear from us repeatedly, it is not any one piece of legislation that is difficult for our members. It is the accumulation. And I will tell you, what they are hearing and what is being considered during this session has our small business members terrified. And they're trying to figure out some if they will be able to stay in business at the end of this. So I just would urge you to proceed cautiously and really bear in mind we are a small business state, and that is with less than 20 employees. And this bill and many others could have a very huge impact. And with that, I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Questions? Not seeing any. Thank you for your testimony this morning. Seeing no one else testify on this bill, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2646. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2685.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this measure prohibits discrimination in employment on the basis of familial status of the employee. There are no amendments before you.
Thank you. And is there any representatives? Representative Smith Warner. Oh, I knew you were still here. Good morning, and if you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
May I ask that I feel like we might as well have the Boley folks up here as
sure.
well to start.
I think that would be Paloma Sparks on my chart.
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Nice to see you all again. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I represent House District 45, Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. I am speaking to you this morning on behalf of House Bill 2685, which, as its description line simply says, prohibits discrimination in employment on the basis of familial status of the employee. My grandfather used to talk about how signs that he saw when he was young that said, "No Irish need apply." And I think we've all probably heard stories like that. And this bill few of us see anything as overt as this anymore. This bill goes to the idea that there are employers who think no parents need apply. Because we've talked earlier and in other situations about the concern that, oh, well, if you're a parent, you're going to be needing time off, or if you're a woman and you're going to have kids, then you're going to go on maternity leave, and you're not going to, and how it ends up getting involved with the pay gap and all that stuff. So this, I think, is a significant movement to give working parents, particularly working mothers, this protection, and just simply using our existing method of protecting for the enforcement of civil rights law to add this as a status against which you cannot be discriminated in civil law. It will also support the sandwich generation who are caring for both parents and kids, their familial prohibiting the discrimination of your familial status because you're a caregiver for someone else in your family, whether it's a parent or a child. And it would not require employers to accommodate to their busy schedules, unlike other things we've been talking about here this morning. It would simply give them equal treatment under the law in employment law. And at that, I'm going to stop and turn it over to my bully neighbor here.
Good morning, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paloma Sparks from the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and we are here in support of House Bill 2685. We think that this is recognizes the reality of workplaces and the struggles that working parents and working mothers have. A key recommendation from the pay inequality study, which we've heard plenty about, is that working mothers really face a difficulty, and women also face difficulty for the risk that employers look at them as not good workers because they may one day leave the workforce to have children. Overall, that creates a significant impact on their ability to earn raises, move forward, and their retirement as they age through their work life. So recognizing the realities of workplaces by calling out familial status and the caregiving responsibilities may help to address that problem. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm kind of wondering how this would work out on top of already existing laws against discrimination. You know, and also someone came by my office earlier this session and asked about a check the box thing for felons, you know, so that they could at least get to the interview process. And so I'm thinking if businesses decide they want a position filled and they don't want and they are discriminating, you know, in that they don't want a mother or a woman or, you know, the potential for maternity leave, and so they look at the application and they don't even give them an interview because they don't want to take that potential. The onus is still on the employer. They could go and make a claim against him saying, look, he didn't employ me because of this, which is sort of what this bill is alluding to. How does this change where we're at right now to where this bill would take us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I remember.
It's kind of a running joke around here right now. Susan,
I'm going to put in for a bill that we have a right angle on these two.
Yeah, just for this committee.
Yeah, just that committee. I would just say, and again, this is where I am not an attorney, and my understanding is part of it is the premise of why it was simply inserted into other ORS that talks specifically about statuses which cannot be discriminated against in employment. And so my understanding is that by inserting it in there to those lists of things against, you know, which you cannot use as the basis of employment discrimination, it gives that as a cause for action. And I'd be happy to defer to my colleague from East Portland, Happy Valley, Boring, and unincorporated Clackamas County, who is indeed an attorney.
Representative Fagan.
Do I have to give a legal disclaimer right now that this is not legal advice? It's not intended to be. This is not creating an attorney-client relationship.
Yes, please.
I think that is a good idea.
I would, and actually, Ms. Earls has also kind of practiced the same type of law that I do. I would think that current discrimination law would prohibit an employer from not hiring a woman for fear that that woman might have a baby. But current employment law does not, if I already have children or if a man has children and during the application process they say, oh, wow, you know, do you have any kids? Yeah, I have three. And for that to be a reason. The idea of someone maybe leaving someday and having a baby, I think, would fall under current discrimination law. But I don't think there's anything that would prohibit an employer today from being like, oh, I don't want to hire any parents in general. That would not be an unlawful employment practice today, I don't think.
Representative Widener.
Mr. Chair. I think that's what I'm hearing. Are we making a new protected class of parents?
Chair Holvey, Representative Widener, essentially, yes, we would be creating that as a protected class.
Familial status.
Status as a protected class, which would be more than parents. It would also be people of caregiving responsibilities.
And which?
Can I do another little bit of an answer? I'm trying to find my. I know that, it is indeed in a couple other states. This is something that exists in statute in a couple other states, at least Alaska and Connecticut, I believe,
and
D.C.
Follow up?
Yes. I almost am thinking here that we're almost getting over the top a little bit. What if we just got rid of male, female, check boxes, race, all of that? And you don't ask those questions, because I don't really care who applies or anything at my facility. I'm looking to see what their capabilities are more than anything else. And I think we're creating too many. Everybody's protected now with this bill. I mean, the people we're discriminating against right now will be young single people. We may as well add them as the protected class, too.
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, I would disagree because I believe that familial status is kind of broad enough that it would probably protect young single people as well. And again, that all employers were as blind to those elements as you are. You know, we wouldn't need any laws if everyone hired based purely on competence.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this is something that I kind of look at like, if I don't want to hire you, I'm not going to. And only a fool would say, because of your family status, then they would probably deserve to be sued. But on the other hand, I may not want to hire you because I don't like you, or I don't think you'd fit my organization, or I don't like your attitude. This is, I don't know why we're even going down this road. I really don't understand what we're trying to achieve here, because if I'm an employer and I want to hire a certain group of people, whether they're talented, whether they have certain talents or something like that, I'm going to seek those people out. I don't care what they look like. I don't care what gender they are. I don't care what their family status is. I'm going to try to work with the best ability that I have with the people that show up that come to work at my organization. So the only thing we're going to do is we're just going to put this to the side, I think, is what I'm trying to say. No one's going to speak out and say, I mean, only a fool would say, I don't like you because you're 6 foot tall. You know,
jeez,
something like that, you know, and the only thing you're going to do is you're going to silence people from expressing what they think, I guess. But I just don't know of anyone that would do this. Has this been a real problem someplace?
Chair Holvey, Representative Esquivel, you would be surprised at the number of employers that will say it out loud.
Bowley needs to visit them.
We have existing protections in housing law that says that you can't discriminate against people for being parents. I think that there are probably a fair number of workplaces where they would not want people who would are going to have to, you know, deal with parental or child care responsibilities or caregiving responsibilities. I don't think it's the vast majority, and I think it's, but it is an issue.
Follow up. Yeah, I don't think that it's the vast majority at all. In fact, I think it's probably the much of the minority, I would assume. So I haven't done this in quite a while, but I used to hire people, and, you know, if we're getting to the point where I'm going to get sued every time I don't hire somebody, I'd have to ask myself, why am I in business?
Representative Nose.
You know, in my experience as a union rep in small and big hospitals, I think it plays out less in hiring and more in subtle discrimination that people experience around promotion or maybe more desirable shifts, where it's like, geez, Representative Fagan, she's constantly coming to me, needing to take time off to take care of a sick parent. I can never rely on her. And those things get said, frankly, quite often pretty openly by employers, more often out of frustration than a desire to actively discriminate against somebody. But they do get said, and I think they pile up after a while. And I think this is actually a pretty important protection that we ought to consider, because the reality is that, you know, both parents do work. Most families, you know, if they have children, you know, they experience these things. And I think the point about, you know, a lot of us now are taking care of our older parents who are getting older and have issues. And I just think, you know, I think in the hiring situation, you're probably right. We're not going to see a lot of this. It's hard to prove. But I think there's a lot of subtle discrimination that goes on around promotions and desirable shifts, and I think this helps in those situations.
Representative Doherty.
This is kind of an answer to Representative Esquivel's question. Yes, indeed, these questions are asked. Back in my younger years and my childbearing years, twice on teaching interviews, I was asked whether I was going to have children.
Yeah.
And I know this will surprise you guys, but in a very short period of time, the two gentlemen knew that they should not have asked that question, because one, even back in the olden days, it was illegal, and two, it was none of their damn business. But no, that was asked. I had 5 teaching interviews the first year before I got a full-time job, and I had 2 of the 5 superintendents asked if I had planned to have children. So hopefully they've gotten smarter in the years since I've interviewed.
Intervening.
But it does indeed happen.
What's the answer to that question?
No.
You're in business.
Intervening years.
Yeah.
Representative Hurd, a question?
It's more of a statement. I maybe this is something that's necessary. I don't know. For me as an employer of almost 11 years now, I've actually been positive when people say they have families, because in my experience with employees, the ones, especially young men that don't have families, they're consistently inconsistent. You know, and the men and women that have worked for me over the years that did have families.
Representative Hurd, you need to be careful not to impugn the integrity of some of our other members.
Anyway, they were more dedicated, was my point. So I've actually had a positive experience with parents. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I do have one question myself, I think I'm going to ask. You know, and I recognize the reason for this, and, you know, adding familial status is one of those list of things that you can't discriminate against. But in the bill, you also list the state of being or the potential to become an individual who is, you know, a provider of care or support. So that's basically everybody, or, you know, well, maybe not everybody, but anybody that potentially could procreate in the future. So I don't know if that's, you know, a good thing or a bad thing at this point, but it is, you know, speaking that anybody, you know, could fall into that category, but what you're saying is that they can't be discriminated against for this familiar status. I just, I don't know. I just stumbled across the potential of becoming a provider of care. Can you speak to, I mean, I recognize where you're trying to go is that a woman may be planning to have children, for example, or a man may be planning to be a father or something. So I don't know. Can you address how broad that is?
Honestly, Mr. Chair, I was going to suggest that there are other testifiers who probably can address that much more specifically.
Okay.
Unless, yeah.
All right. I don't see any other questions. Thank you for your testimony this morning. I hope you have a great weekend. Up next, Kate Newell and John Bartholomew.
Thank you, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, Kate Newhall here today with Family Forward. Happy to be providing support in testimony in support of House Bill 2685. Family Forward definitely supports protecting workers from discrimination in the workplace based on their familial responsibilities. We know that this is real and it happens and hear from workers, particularly women, all the time about this situation and discrimination, both in hiring and in promotions. We know that discrimination against caregivers, and especially mothers, exacerbates the wage gap. Mothers are less likely to be hired and are offered lower salaries than women without children and fathers. Mothers earn 5% less per child than non-mothers. We think that 2685 will ensure that parents and caregivers are not discriminated against at work for their responsibilities outside of the workplace. We believe that caregiver discrimination based on employees' responsibilities, whether those are real or perceived, does exist. And I'll just tell a little story about this. I definitely have friends that when going on interviews in the 25 to 35 age range, don't wear a wedding ring when they're interviewing. They don't want to give any sort of perception that they might be looking to have a family. Employers, I think, do discriminate based on these responsibilities when they deny employment or promotions, or they pay less, or they take other negative actions in the workplace. In addition, more and more Americans are shouldering elder care and family care responsibilities. About half of our workforce expects to be providing elder care in the next 5 years. And more often than not, these caregivers are women. 66% of caregivers are women, and they spend more than 50% more time providing care than male caregivers do. And I think lower-income women, again, carry a particularly heavy burden. 52% of women caregivers with incomes below $35,000 a year spend 20 hours a week providing care. That's a huge chunk of their time. This law is relatively simple. It just requires that employers give equal treatment under the law. And there are several other jurisdictions that have similar protections for familial status or parenthood. Alaska is one of them, the District of Columbia, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We also have a federal executive order that prohibits in federal employment discriminating against employees based on their status as a parent. We appreciate the opportunity to bring forward this issue. We believe that discrimination based on familial status hurts mothers and the families who rely on them. Eliminating wage discrimination will help families to better take care of themselves and allowing women and caregivers to get into and to stay in the workplace. Thank you.
Okay. Hello, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, I am John Bartholomew. I'm the Government Relations Director for AARP Oregon. And we're here to support House Bill 2685 for the other end of the spectrum from child raising, and that's caring for seniors, caring for family members who need medical care. I've also seen this a lot when I was working for the Alzheimer's Association. So there are differences between caring for a child and caring for an adult, but both situations can actually lead to employment discrimination. The folks that are caring for an adult are often older. They're usually over 55 years old. And we surveyed just recently, just last summer, voters in Oregon over 45. And we asked them, have you already been a caregiver or are you currently a caregiver? Over 50% said they have been. And that's for an an adult family member, not for a kid. And 42% said that they expect to be a caregiver for an adult in the future. And we do know of real cases of discrimination. So some of what this looks like are an employee being fired when they've asked for leave to care for their chronically ill father, or an employee called lazy and fired after taking leave that he had coming to him to care for his mother. Or an employee denied leave when her employer asserts it's not her responsibility to care for her ailing mother as long as her father's still alive. Well, that father might also have other health issues, too. I mean, so many times when I worked for the Alzheimer's Association, I met families that were struggling through dealing with this. They had an 80-year-old father with dementia and a 78-year-old mother who had diabetes. That 78-year-old mother is not going to be able to be taking care of that 80-year-old man, especially if moving them around was part of the deal. Family members have to step in. They often step in. It's a natural support system that we have. And we really don't want to see these families dealing with these issues also having to worry about losing their job. And that's why we support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions to this panel? Thank you very much. I appreciate the perspective on the elders. You know, it did happen to me once, actually, and I think Representative Fagan may have had a similar experience. I was actually fired one time because I took time off of work to go help my wife with her mother, who was dying, and we needed to be there to help take care of her in the last couple of days. So it does hit home, that particular aspect of this. So with that, I appreciate your testimony, and hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Up next, Tim. Oh, gosh, I forgot.
Bernancic
and Betsy Earls again. Is Betsy still here? Oh, there she is.
Yeah.
Good morning. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim Bernasek. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Dunn Carney in Portland. I primarily represent agricultural farmers. A significant part of my practice is agricultural employment law, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Farm Bureau with our concerns on House Bill 2685. And I guess the focus I want to talk about today, Representative Holvey, is what you mentioned, is the definition of familial status and how that's different from the other protected classes that are currently in state statute or federal civil rights law. And it has the issue of having the potential to become. And here the proponents of the bill talk about mainly focused at, it sounds like, at mothers primarily, but obviously, as you pointed out, it's really hard to determine who wouldn't be protected under this definition, who does not have the potential to become a provider of care, either of young folks or older folks, particularly is how the family member definition is categorized. And here's why that's problematic. Most of the other protected classes they have fairly immutable characteristics or unchangeable characteristics, you know, race, national origin. You know what that is. You can define that. And the way these lawsuits play out, and Representative Barton and Representative Fagan may remember from sort of law school 101, was in employment discrimination cases that the plaintiff's burden is you put on your sort of prima facie case. Is there elements here of discrimination? Then it's up to the employer then to provide what's the legitimate business reason for the decision. And then oftentimes the ping pong goes back to, well, wait a minute, that's really pretext. That's just they're just using that as an excuse. And then it goes back to the employer to come up with a reason. And I'll tell you just an example that I've seen in the agricultural employment context. We have a lot of issues. A lot of the migrant workers are from Mexico primarily, But there can be issues with a subset of workers who are increasingly from a region called Oaxaca. So they're referred to as Oaxacans, and they are oftentimes have their own dialect. They don't speak Spanish, so it's just a different workplace dynamic there. And oftentimes there are claims that supervisors will mistreat these Oaxacan workers. So the way this plays out then is a plaintiff's lawyer will interview that client, and they'll put on their basic case, and the employer will say, well, no, actually it wasn't, the supervisor didn't mistreat them because we were Hawking, it was because he wouldn't show up to work or wasn't productive or whatever else. Then it goes back to, well, no, it's really pretext because there's all these other workers. It's because he's Oaxacan. So then what we would go back and we would do is, well, let's look at other Oaxacans in our work. How are they treated? And is that, that's how we sort of bounce this ball back. When you have a classification of workers that you can't really classify because there really are no boundaries on who is part of this class, it becomes very difficult just technically in how to handle these types of cases. So obviously we have concerns about just sort of general nature about a new a protected class, but I think there are some technical reasons why it's important to consider this definition of having the potential to become and the problems that creates just a fairly technical level in how these cases play out.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries and appearing before you in opposition to House Bill 2685. I think we would echo Mr. Bernasik's concerns about the broad definition of familial status under this bill, including the potential to become a caregiver, because honestly, all of us have the potential to become a caregiver at some point in our lives. We have parents, we have children, we have siblings that could end up being dependent on us. So it makes it very difficult when an employer is trying to make an employment decision to identify when an employee complains about discrimination, whether, the decision was made because of the potential to become a caregiver, because of familial status, or more frequently occurs, because of a performance problem or attitude problem or something like that. So we would encourage the committee, if you intend to go forward with this bill, to narrow the definition significantly, especially since you're basically creating a new protected class under the discrimination lawsuits. And I would also encourage you to consider the fact that we are dealing with a very small subset of employers who are probably creating problems that this bill addresses, and to consider not sweeping all employers into the same discrimination potential net as you're doing under the bill right now.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Fagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for engaging so much on this topic. It just happens to be the area in which I practice. I promise I won't talk when we do prevailing wage and other things that I don't know much about. But I find the objections very odd in terms of, because everybody could be in this class. First of all, the bill simply prohibits a decision being made on the basis of that, not decisions being made to anyone who's in this class. Certainly parents are going to get fired. You just can't get fired because you're a parent. And in particular, I find it curious the claim that other protected classes are narrow, and that's just simply not the case. Gender, everybody has a gender. So an employer, every single person who applies for a job is a gender. Therefore, an employer, that is a protected class that covers everybody. Employers simply can't make a judgment based on gender. Race, everybody has a race. Certainly the discrimination we see more frequently applies to races that are non-white, but certainly an employer couldn't say, I only hire non-white people. So everybody who applies is a part of that protected class. The decision can't be made on the basis of that. I could go on, national origin. Everybody has a national origin. So the idea that the definition of this class applies to everyone, therefore it should be narrowed, to me is just very odd. Every protected class applies to everyone. Employers simply can't make discriminatory decisions on the basis of those characteristics. So I'm just pushing back on that testimony. Thank you.
Chair Holby, Representative Fagan, if I can address that, I think that's accurate. If the definition of familial status in this bill were just means the state of being a provider of care or support to a family member, it's the potential to become. It's, you know, at some point when an employment decision is made, there is a characteristic that you, your national origin or your sex or your marital status, that may change at a different time, but at a certain time when a decision is being made, there is a characteristic that you can judge. It's the, again, the objection that I raised or the concern I raised is in this definition of having the potential to become is everybody at any time. So that's where I think the concern comes in, because you're absolutely right. Everybody is a certain gender, but a gender at a certain time, or a race, well, Bruce Jenner, raise that issue. So what I'm saying is that things can change. So I think that is the technical problem with this potential to become. We don't have protections for religion, for example, the potential to become Presbyterian. It's based on a religion that you currently have, and so you have a characteristics which, when you need to go back and as an employer representing an employer, and I say, well, and it's to a charge of pretext that this business decision that we said why we made this decision related to this individual person, I can go back and say, well, all right, if they're saying that's pretext because it's because of familial status, all right, mothers, well, how are we treated other mothers in the workplace, for example? But when you have potential to become a particular status, that breaks down, that way of analyzing and breaking down the case doesn't work.
Other questions? I mean, it seems to me, I think that, we could just add, this includes pregnant women, and could potentially address your concerns. Not sure whether that's necessary at this point. And I'm not sure if that makes it too narrow either. But are there other questions? Not seeing any. I appreciate your testimony this morning.
Thank you.
And hope you have a great weekend. Obviously, I must be looking forward to one. Is there anybody else that wanted to testify on House Bill 2685?
Everybody.
Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2685.
You did a good job. I thought you asked a good point. I'm glad you said something.
What was the...
It was interesting. I learned something.
I apologize for anybody who is waiting to testify on House Bill 2542, but we are going to carry that bill over till...
We just have some questions, a legal question. So okay. Whenever you would like to,
well,
this is careful. Just reschedule it, not carry it to Monday.
Okay. We will not carry this bill over. We will reschedule it in the future.
Oh, thank you.
So with that, I didn't open a public hearing on it, did I?
No.
So I don't have to close one. With that, I will adjourn the...
No.
Oh,
introduce committee measures.
I'm not going to adjourn. Thank you very much. I will... notice how that gavel didn't go very quick.
That's right.
I will open a work session for the introduction of committee bills.
Chair Holvey, I move that LC 1907, dated February 18, 2015, and LC 3678, dated February 18, 2015, be introduced as committee bills.
Representative Barton moves LC 1907, dated February 18, 2015, and LC 3678, dated February 18, 2015, be introduced as committee bills. Committee, this motion does not mean that you support or oppose a particular bill. It's purely a courtesy to allow a legislative concept to be introduced as a committee measure. Any discussion? Is there any objection to adopting these as committee measures? Seeing none, LC 1907, LC 3678 are introduced as committee bills. With that, I will close the work session on for the introduction
of
committee bills.
Like
just one point, committee, we do have an agenda on Monday, and there is a bill up that we are pulling from the agenda.
2540.
And it is House Bill 2540.
How much I can't exercise.
So to make a note that bill will not be up
trying to remember what it is.
On Monday. So I will now adjourn the House Committee on Business
I'll
and Labor.
Yet.
Is there now adjourn the House Committee on Business
I'll
and Labor?
Yet.